Recorded.
Okay, well, welcome everyone. Thanks for hanging in there. This is our final call for RP102, Evaluation in Recreation, and we've had four of them for this advanced learning event. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, that's totally okay, because this is the hardest advanced learning event that we actually offer. So Thorsten and I were talking at the beginning of the call, and it is more of just exploring and introducing you to it. It's not expecting you to achieve a certain level of being able to do evaluations or anything. So just take a big breath and relax if you're feeling a little overwhelmed with it. I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of Kwanlin Dun First Nation and Ton Kwachin Council. So last week, we talked about collecting data. We talked about how to do it respectfully and the pros and cons of some of the different tools that we can use. This week, we're going to move from gathering data to making good use of it. Remember that a good evaluation is one that's going to be useful. There's absolutely no point in wasting people's time answering surveys, filling out questionnaires, or participating in focus groups if you're not going to take the time to learn or to use what you learn to make changes that are needed. There is one exception to that, and that is summative evaluation. And you may recall, if you had a look at the common evaluation terms, that a summative evaluation is something that happens afterwards, and it's at the end. So with that type of evaluation, usually you're just presenting the results and the outcomes and the outputs to funders to justify the value of their investment. You're probably not moving beyond what you've done. So anyway, before I get too much into this week's content, we'll do a quick round of introductions. I think that you guys have all met each other on past calls. So what I'm going to ask you to do when you introduce yourself is just to remind us of your name so we can start to recognize voices, where you're at. And I'd like you to describe one way that you think of or that you use to organize and analyze information or data. It doesn't have to be information or data that you collect through an evaluation. It could be information that you have in your office on something or that you have in your personal files. So just share your ideas about, or one way how you describe or organize, or how you describe how you organize and analyze information. So Kelsey, I'm going to put you on the spot because you were on the ball and joined the call on time. So do you mind introducing yourself first and describing a way that you organize and analyze information?
Sure. So I'm Kelsey. I'm based in Lake Forest, and I work for RPAE, the Recreation and Parks Association of Yukon. And one way that I organize and analyze information would be probably looking for similarities within it and then grouping them together based off of various similarities.
Awesome. And do you find that you do that in your personal life as well as at work, or just mostly at work?
No, personal life as well, for sure.
Yeah. So that's interesting, hey? We're always sort of organizing and analyzing information regardless of where we are. Thanks for that, Kelsey. Next on my list, I have Thorsten. I'm not sure if you're busy taking photos yet or if you can jump in.
No, I'm here. Can you just repeat the question again, please?
You bet. So describe one way you organize and analyze information.
Okay. It's Thorsten here from Fort Providence, and I'm the physical literacy coordinator at this point for, Yeah, I'm not quite sure. So I am a physical literacy coordinator, let's say it this way. And, I don't know, actually. I mean, I think too much. Does that help? Overthinking
You're a photographer. How do you organize and analyze your photos? Because they're information sources, right?
That's a good point, yeah. So I have different workflows for sure. And that's for photography. And yes, you're right. And in life, in the working life too, where I mean, for me, when we start a project, it all starts on my computer with a folder. And then within that folder, I just reorganize, every single detail. Every time I have information come in, it goes right into that. So I have it all in one spot that I can easily access. If I need finances, I go back in there. If I need any documents that we shared among partners, I need that. Or the pictures go into that. So I have that workflow in place. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, that's definitely one way that we for sure organize things so that then we know where to find them, right? And so that is an important way of managing information that we have. And then if you're analyzing it, it might be looking for common themes. So you might be looking for financial information, or you might be looking for descriptive information or deadlines or something like that. So
yeah.
Exactly. Thanks, Thorsten.
Thank you.
Let's go to Spider. Spider, how about, would you like to introduce yourself and just describe one way that you organize and analyze information?
Good morning. My name is Spider Jones. I work at Sport North Federation here in Yellowknife. I will generally, because I'm male and very visual, I will put items from the same topic in a pile. Example, I do multi-sport executive director things for quiet PSO wrestling. So I'll put everything I get as I go, come along, I put it in the pile, and then I will go through that pile and create smaller piles of in particular categories. So for example, it's accountability time for our funding. So I'll go through and find things that relate to a previous accountability submission, the financials that are required for that submission. I also need to chase down letters in good standing from societies and from the national sport organization, and then find a template that I use to for my general reporting. So I do it that way. I guess most recently, I was putting in an application to the feds for the Community Sport for All initiative. And part of which was they wanted to know about project measurement and evaluation. So there what I did was, and it's very timely, and I've just begun to thank you very much, Caroline, is I looked at the assignments for the evaluation and I took those headings. And then from those headings, I went back to the slide deck and populated a better description of those headings from the slides that reflected those headings. I put them in a suitable order. I acknowledged at the end that the above was informed in large part by learnings having participated in Rec North's evaluation and recreation online course, and it became tidy and succinct in that box that I used to complete the application form. So that's how I handled that one.
Well, that's awesome. So, Spider, I really like what you just explained, because you described a little bit more than just organizing and analyzing. What you've described to us is how you organize things, how you analyze them, how you interpret them, and then how you use what that information, whether it's for reporting or an evaluation plan or whatever it is. So that's actually everything that we're going to cover this week. So thank you for sharing that process with us.
Thank you.
How about yourself? Would you like to introduce yourself and describe one way you organize and analyze information? And when Spider said he has piles of things and stacks in his office, I'm thinking of your office too.
My office is just messy.
But what's said on the call stays on the call.
There you go.
Well, my name is Ann Morgan, and I'm the Executive Director for the Recreation and Parks Association of the Yukon. And thanks to Caroline, we use evaluation all the time for everything. We as a team, develop a work plan for the year because it's a submission we need to do to the government for funding. And we attach a budget to that of what we anticipate the year is going to cost to operate the programs we're going to deliver. And then we have an internal tracker. We call it the master tracker, but it's really just an Excel spreadsheet that takes the work plan and breaks it down into the financial components so that we know we have planned for program A, say $10,000. Then we allocate that amount to that project in that spreadsheet. And then each of those spreadsheets, depending on the funder, breaks it down again quarterly and by category, so whether it's personnel or travel or whatever the case may be. And then throughout the year, we track our expenses according to the program and the budget. And as we track things throughout the year, we report quarterly to the funder. So then I use that tracker to do the reporting. So I can say, well, we had planned to spend $5,000 in quarter one, but we only spent two. And so then it makes me go back to the work plan, because then I have to explain, well, why did we only spend two? So I go back to the work plan and go, yeah, okay, well, that was because, you know, the snow was still on the ground and we couldn't do that program, so we had to delay it. Like, it could be any number of reasons, but I think the real benefit of it is that analysis of data, really. It's just looking back at what we thought we were going to do, what actually happened, and then using the data to report. So I find it a super interesting process. And I think the real value of it, too, is at the end of the day, we can justify to the funders what we did and why we did it and what worked well and what didn't. And that's really beneficial to the organization when we want to apply for funding again in the future.
That's great. Thanks so much, Anne. That's interesting that you could show that whole process from work planning all the way through. I think what each of you have shared is definitely a way that, you know, even outside the realm of evaluation, how we regularly make sense of information that we collect. And to make sense of information, we have to organize it. Then we have to analyze it and figure it out, and then we do something with it. We learn from it, we use it, we share it with other people. So that's a part of evaluation that makes doing evaluation useful and meaningful. If we just collected information and didn't use it in any way, it wouldn't be a worthwhile process. I was also going to share with you one way that I organize and analyze information. So when I'm working with people, I loved using colored sticky notes. So I always have to make sure I've got supplies of different colors, and different colors represent different things. And then I get people to stick them up on the wall, because with colored sticky notes, you can move them around as much as you want. So they're quite visual. So that's one way that I organize and analyze data or information. So thanks for sharing. On slide 51, if you're following along in the presentation, and if not, no worries. You can see that, as I mentioned, making sense of data involves organizing, analyzing, and interpreting. This process leads to our evaluation findings or our evaluation results, and that's what sometimes get asked for. When you're organizing your data, as described on slide 52, it's important to keep notes about what you're doing. So if you organize things into different piles, make sure you have a record of what each pile represents. If you organize, if you kind of throw some things out because they're not important, or delete some files because they're not important, maybe, that's one thing for you in your office, but in an evaluation, want to make sure that record that or take a note of it. I'll give you an example. We had 41 responses entered into SurveyMonkey for our survey, but when I went through them all, only 24 people respondents had answered all of the questions completely. So what I chose to do was remove most of the incomplete responses, leaving just two that were almost complete. So you'll see that there's actually 26 responses when you go and look at that. So if I was doing an evaluation, I would record that, 41 people might have started the survey, but once that was cleaned up, we actually ended up with 26 responses. There are lots of ways, like lots of different ways that we can analyze or sort of figure out what our data or our information is telling us. And we talked about some of these in week two, and others are shown on slide 53. One of the quotes for this week is by Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he said that people are only or people only see what they are prepared to see. So when you're analyzing your data or your information, you want to try and be objective about that process. You want to look at what you have, your data or your information, in different ways, play around with it, and keep your mind open to things that it might tell you that you might not be expecting. So after you count or calculate, compare, contrast, or look for patterns, themes, or relationships in your data, then you're going to move on to interpreting it. And I really like just using really basic questions, because interpreting it sounds complicated to me. So the questions that I use are what, so what, and now what. So I'd just like to pause for a moment. I'll pop this in the chat, and I know that it's just Kelsey and I in the chat right now, so I might repeat this for you guys. But if you think of the questions of what, so what, and now what, what are we trying to determine with those questions? How will they help us get to our evaluation findings? Thorsten, are you taking photos now, or are you busy?
I will be busy in 5 seconds because the kids are coming.
Okay, I'll pass on you then. So, Spider, if you think of those three questions, what, so what, and now what, how do you think they help us make sense of the information that we've gathered and organized?
I like how it's a progression, and I like how you simply stated, they've simply stated it on slide 54. So what happened? What did we see? What are the findings? And then, what's it mean? What's it prove? What's working? What needs to improve? And that last one's a big one. And then, now what? Actually, when I printed the slide, I lost half the verbiage there. But I do like how it leads from one to the other to the next, and something from what we have in hand to something that we want to solve, or that we want to, it leads back to your recent fair line of why we're actually doing an evaluation. And hopefully it's
exactly
more than just getting, following an obligation by the funder.
That's right. So I like how you explain that as a progression, and, moving from the what to the so what to the now what. I'm glad that you find that a useful sort of guideline to help you interpret your data. Anne, do you have any thoughts about what each of these questions helps us determine, the what, the so what, and the now what?
I think what it made me think of for the project that I would like to do is more the now what. Like, how do you take what you've learned and use it to develop a program that's relevant and will be useful and people will participate in? So I guess I think of it as sort of in terms of developing something. I don't know if that's
exactly. No, that's a great answer. And there's no right or wrong answer here, but, you're sort of sharing it similar to what Spider does, but, suggesting it in a different way. So, now what? What are we going to do with this? Where are we going to go? What can we do differently? That's great. Thanks for sharing that. Kelsey, do you have any thoughts on what each of the what, so what, and now what questions helps us sort of determine or figure out?
I like how, if you go into the evaluation with those three questions in mind, it really, I think, helps lead the evaluation. Like, you have a flow to follow.
Yeah. So, I guess it also, that flow, or as Spider said, of the progression, it helps you move from sort of the present to what Anne described as the future. So it takes you through, it's a bit of a journey, right? So you can, the what is in the present, what have we done, or even maybe the past, what was done, what did we see, what did we observe from what we did, and then so what does this mean, did we actually influence any change that we thought we wanted to influence, or what's working, what's not working, and then, as you mentioned, that now what, moving forward, right? So what options do we even have? So these are really good questions, I think, to help guide you when you're kind of moving from, okay, so we've planned our evaluation, we've collected information from people, we've got all this data, we've organized it, we've sorted through it a little bit. What does it tell us? So what does that mean? And now what are we going to do with it? So that's, it's a really good in-between thing to lead you from, you know, doing that to moving into the future. So thanks for sharing your thoughts about that. Once we've gone through that process, we're going to end up with something that we want to refer to as maybe evaluation findings or results or something like that. A lot of people use the word findings. Sometimes I say what we've learned, like our learnings, or, you know, what we've observed. There's different ways of, but I've just called it findings here. So once you've identified evaluation findings, the next thing you want to do is make good use of them. Because that's the whole purpose of doing this. What we need to do is keep in mind that what might be useful to you or to your organization might not be useful to another stakeholder. So I've got a couple of questions around this, and I'm just hoping to sort of draw out your thoughts on this. So if we have evaluation findings or we've learned something, who might be interested in what we've learned? And I'll start with Anne first this time. So Anne, when we've figured out something about our evaluation or we've got some ahas or insights, who might be interested in hearing those?
I think maybe the people that have contributed would be nice to share that back. Because I do surveys all the time. And sometimes the information gets shared back, but often it doesn't. And if it's a topic I'm interested in, I think it's nice to share those results back with the participants because they obviously have an interest in what you're working on.
That's right, especially if it's a program that's going to continue on, right? Like SPIDA, the example of your Common Vision program. You know, people might want to know what you've heard from all of them to see if their perspective is similar or different. So thanks for sharing that, Anne. Let's go backwards then. Spider, who else besides the people who shared their information and their insights with you or your participants, who else might be interested in your evaluation findings?
Well, I think certainly the funder who was convinced of the merit of doing the investigation, I think as well, our own organization on the premise that, you know, we're in the business, for example, of developing physical literacy, that was this a project that's worthwhile to repeat? It wasn't just a one-off, which we hoped it wasn't. But still, you know, we have objective, valuable, quantifiable data that will lead us to that, help us make that decision. So certainly the organization that funded, the organization that we work for, it's the premise of our work life, but we want to do things better, smarter, and solve problems or avoid problems, maybe.
That's great. So Spider, really you're highlighting two sort of sets of stakeholder groups, the organization that's hosting this project and done the work and the funder that supported it or provided resources for it. Anne highlighted the participants and the people who've given you information. Kelsey, can you think of any other stakeholders that might be interested in your evaluation findings? Kelsey, you might be on mute. I'm not sure. I can't hear you. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
I can now, yes.
Okay. Depending on what you're evaluating, the community members themselves might be interested in the evaluation results.
Exactly. That's another stakeholder group that sometimes we don't always remember. So in the RLA or the survey that we put together and collected information about, ways of engaging youth in community sport and recreation, I can see that not only recreation leaders would be interested in that, but a community might be as well, because there might be some learnings for them. So thanks for sharing those. I've got another question for you now, and I'm going to go back to what you said in this question. So, Anne, you talked about the people who gave you information and the participants. Spider, you talked about the organizations hosting and supporting, so funders and your own organization. And Kelsey, you talked about the community. So now let's go back to it, and I'm going to ask you, what type of information would be appropriate to share back with that group? So, Anne, what type of information would you share back with the people who gave you information and the participants?
I think you have to be a little bit careful with that, right? Because there's privacy in small communities. Like, you certainly don't want to go back and say, well, Sally said such and such, right? Like, I think you probably want to share back very sort of broad trends almost, rather than getting too specific, especially in a small community where people could figure out who Sally was, what they said. So that's what I would think.
Exactly, yeah. So keeping it general, keeping it fairly broad, so that you can't really identify who said what, because they all know that they participated. So great. So, Spider, for a funder in an organization, would you say that it would be the same as what Anne said for the people and participants, or would it be appropriate to share a different type of information?
I think they'd still be different. The ones that you, the stuff, the material that you put for your own organization, it may be, may have a different lingo. It may be assigning staff to, point one and two, you want to get to your communications person. Point three, you might want to get to your executive director. Point whatever. So I think, but you wouldn't be sharing that with your funder. Hopefully your funder may have given you specific, an outline or a template of what they wanted back, so you could follow that. But I think they could and perhaps should be different.
Exactly. So you might need more detail, it sounds like, for your organization. You might need to task people with certain pieces. You might need to, your evaluation findings might lead to recommendations for certain areas of your organization. But you also mentioned your funder, they might have certain parameters in your funding agreement that you have to meet. So you can see how that's a very different approach to using perhaps what's the same evaluation and presenting findings to the people and participants versus your funders and organizations. So now I'm going to ask Kelsey, how might this be different if you're sharing information from the same evaluation with your community? What would be appropriate to share with a community?
I think when sharing with the community, you would have to keep the information pretty broad, as Anne stated, especially with small communities. You don't want to get into too many specifics, or it can be really obvious who gave what information.
Exactly. And the other thing that I find that helps, especially with really small communities, is to emphasize the strengths. So emphasize what worked well, what the successes were, what the impacts were, because, we have enough negative things and tough times in many of our small communities. So sometimes it can be helpful to say, what we found is that this works really well for us. And it gives opportunities for communities to recognize and feel good about what their strengths are. So when we have successes, it gives an opportunity to celebrate those. So thanks. I think that's a really important part of presenting evaluation findings, is who's interested in them and what would be appropriate to share. I refer to this as sort of presenting and sharing your evaluation findings and results purposefully. So as you can see from what each of you said, you may need different reports or different presentation styles. So my last question to you now is, how might you present this to that group? Like, what might it look like? Is there a creative way to doing it? So funder might require, I'll use one of Spider's examples, a funder might require a report, but there's other different ways of doing that. So Anne, just to start with you again, what are some creative ways that you might present or share your findings with participants and people who engaged in your evaluation?
I guess I can think of a couple of different things that might work. One of them would be sort of that infographic kind of presentation or art, like that kind of very visual presentation, I guess. Could be photographed with some words underneath, like those kinds of ideas. Or, oh, no, I forgot the other one. Oh, and I guess the other one I was thinking was, if you have used the content to develop a new program for the community, it could be something around the new program, right? Like we've got, thanks for your input. Here's our new walking program sign up today. Like that, like you said, sort of focusing on the positive and the strengths of what came from the evaluation. I think that might be good.
Yeah, and I think that recognition is really helpful because people feel like their time has been valued, right, and that you've really listened to them. And when people feel listened to, they're more likely to get involved and engaged in the programs and services that you're offering and delivering. So thanks for sharing that, Anne. Spider, how about yourself? You've mentioned, you know, the funders and your organization. What are some creative ways that you might present your evaluation results or findings to either or both of those sort of groups or stakeholders?
I really like, as I'm male and visual, I really like the infographic presentation method and the CAWS, the Canadian Association for the Advancement of Women in Sport, now called Canadian Women in Sport. You know, they're outstanding at what they do. I'm looking at one now. It talks about women in sport viewing a lifetime of participation. It's got lots of visuals of athletes, you know, crossing a finish line. Goes on to talk about the status of women and girls in sport. 41% of girls between the ages of 13 to 17 don't participate in sport. So they've got a graphic of a whole bunch of women's stick figures and then the percentage of those that don't stay in sport. And then they'll also have another one is women and leaders in sport, and it'll show a circle within a circle, and it'll talk about 38% are senior staff, 29% are board members, 24% so forth. But they'll visually show the by shading in the circle what's the 38% and so forth. And I think it's a really cool way to take results of their data and display them so that it's quick and easy. I think unfortunately we've been trained to have messages given to us that we can interpret in less than 5 seconds because we're going to be moving on and 5 seconds may be long.
Yeah, so those visuals really help, right? When you can see them, it's much more clear than reading a paragraph that explains something.
Yeah, and there's actually, I deal at World Cup time for soccer with a company out of England called Graphic News, because they do an outstanding, Euro Cup soccer or World Cup soccer wall chart. But I look at the rest of their website, and it's they take the most pertinent themes of the week, and they create a visual for it, and it's very cool. I'll send you the link for that, and you can share it around if you like.
That would be great. Thanks.
Yeah,
so there's a lot of creative ways that you can actually share the data. When it comes to funders, unfortunately, sometimes they do require it to be written in a certain format. So if you go back to our last learning event, which was EF103 reporting and recreation, you might recall that there are certain formats and certain requirements for reporting, which, you know, really if you're reporting to a funder or you're sharing your evaluation piece, then, you know, they might be looking for specific things. One of the things that ARPE does is holds sort of more of an in-person, this is pre-COVID, presentation with funders so that if they haven't read the whole long report that they require, then that information can be shared a little more concisely, like wider what you're suggesting in visuals and things like that. Thorsten's back, so I'm going to ask Thorsten, how might you creatively share evaluation findings or results with either of those two groups that Spider also mentioned, with funders or your organization? So we've talked about infographics and visuals. Are there other ways to present findings or share results?
So maybe this is, I don't know, an out-of-the-box idea, but what I have suggested with the National Sports Organization in the last few years is, instead of just focusing to putting reports forward at the AGM, that we are meeting before the AGM virtually, and the staff person with the department and then the chair or the board representative that has a portfolio of that, they're meeting with whoever wants to join in to talk about, let's say, finance or coach development or marketing. So there will be a presentation talking about the statistics of social media during the year, the sponsorship they received, the marketing campaigns that we ran. And at the end of that, there will be then questions and answers that can be then directly answered. They've taken the time from the AGM, so maybe that's something we can do too, is sharing that information in a webinar or in a virtual setting, and just open it up for our questions and answers as well. Do you think that might be a thing?
Yeah. I think especially for something that's national, right, like a larger organization, it's almost like having little breakout groups, and you go to pick the group that you're most interested in learning about, you know, learning what they've learned or something. You could even do that with little visual findings, like what we learned about this part of the project and what we learned about our participants or something like that, right? So I think what you're suggesting is breaking it into bite-sized pieces and making sure that your audiences can express their interest. They don't have to read it. Does that make sense?
That does, yeah. And, I mean, for me, and that's what I'm standing for now for many years, I'm trying to portray and be a role model in the business, saying that we need to come together. We need to work together. And sometimes it's scary to get that feedback, and sometimes it's scary to say, you know, the evaluation, it showed that this just didn't work. And that's fine. It feels like a disappointment, but it's fine, because then now we can learn from it and move on. But then even if we have in that conversation negative comments or feedback, again, we can take it and hopefully move on. I mean, if there's a violent person and so on, that's a different story. But I think, for me, again, it goes back to come together, work together, and make things happen together.
Yeah, and that comes back to our three questions. What? Like, what happened? So what does this mean? And if it didn't work, that's fine. But now what? Where do we go from here? So, you know, that framework can be really helpful. Thanks, Thorsten. And then coming back to Kelsey, we're talking about the community as being one of our stakeholder or audiences in an evaluation. What are some creative ways that you might present and share your evaluation results with your community?
I think infographics are always a good way to go, because they catch people's attention and they're usually pretty easy to understand. So that'd probably be the best way. If you can, without giving away too much privacy information, sharing stories can also be really helpful.
That's right. So stories, infographics, you can use social media if it's appropriate, all sorts of things. So again, trying not to use too many words, I think, with those stakeholder groups that are like participants and community, but you might need more words with funders or different ways with organizations. So it's really important that we do sort of be purposeful in our evaluation findings, how we present them, and how we share them. So we have to consider our audiences, what they might need, or what they might be interested in, and how they might use the information we share. One thing we didn't mention is that we also have to think about what budget we have available. Because if you don't have a budget to do a video or to create infographics, then you might have to resort to more traditional ways of sharing your findings. But really, when we share findings, the reason we want to do it is to celebrate successes, be accountable to our funders, promote what we're doing, what's working well, encourage people to participate and engage, but also sharing can get us support for future initiatives. And sometimes, if we're really lucky, we might be able to influence public policy. So if you go back about 15 years to the Canadian Parks and Rec Association, Everybody Gets to Play, they did a lot of research work into the barriers that low-income families and children living in low-income families face, and attempted to present that in ways and what they'd learned in ways to actually influence public policy to make recreation more accessible and inclusive. So keep in mind that there's lots of different ways that you can present what you've learned from an evaluation, and there might be many reasons or different stakeholders who are interested in that. So a lot of that information was on slide 60, if you were following along. Speaking now of others who might be interested in your evaluation findings, I've got the final required learning activity, or RLA, ready for you to jump in and tackle. Now, tackle sounds like it's a big task. I want you to make sure that you don't do too much with it, because I don't want you to walk away from it feeling overwhelmed. I want you to just take a little bite-sized piece out of it. So for the required learning activity that's outlined in number 11 in our learning event, you're going to start by downloading what's called the data set, and that's just an Excel file, and that's the information. There is nobody's names are attached to it anymore. I've removed all the names, and actually I have somebody who won a hoodie, and she's from CARCRA, so I might have to ask Ann to deliver it. When you download the data set, you want to start looking at it and maybe organize it a little bit and make sense of what's in there. When you're doing that, jot down some notes, like, do you sort things by community size? Do you sort them by, by number, or by who works with youth? How are you sorting it? And then I just want you to select one or two findings or results to present on. So in the survey, we looked at things like engaging youth from an individual perspective, from an organizational perspective, and from a community perspective. You don't need to do all three of those. Pick which one is most interesting to you. Select one or two key findings from that, and then prepare a presentation. Ideally, I'm looking for a presentation that's maybe a page to two pages. If it's more than three, then it's too long. So try and keep it nice and short. If you can use graphics, that would be wonderful as well. And I've popped a couple of examples from last year's activity in there, so you can see what other people have done. And the main thing here is try and make your presentation appropriate to our audience. So our audience is Northern Recreation Leaders and Recreation Organizations. And I did sort of promise that we would share what we learned back. So if you can capture some things in a really simple infographic or a couple of sentences or a couple of key points for your findings, that would be awesome, because that will make it easier to share through the Rec North social media. If for any reason you don't want what you've created shared, please make sure that you put a note on there that says, please do not share this, and then I will respect that. I'm just going to quickly go around and ask if you have any questions about the required learning activity before I move on to the last part and wrap up our call. So let's start with Kelsey. Any questions about the final required learning activity?
Not yet.
Okay, well, you know where to find me if you have any. Thorsten, any questions about the final required learning activity?
Not yet. Thanks, Colin.
Okay, Spider?
Yes. So if I wanted to focus in on an infographic but didn't have the skills, could I describe to you then what I would put in the infographic? That's similar to what we did okay. Oh, that's good.
Absolutely. You can describe it to me. You can just use bullet points or words. You can get a paper and crayons out and try and draw it. I'm okay with that. Or the other thing you can use, and Kelsey can probably send you the link if you want to, is check out Canva. It's an online tool, and it is really helpful for creating things. So, Kelsey, okay, maybe you can do a private message. Sorry, what's that, Spider?
What's it called? Can?
Canva. Kelsey, I wonder if you've... Kelsey uses it, right? So.
Yeah. Also, PowerPoint is really helpful for making infographics because you can input graphs and stuff really easily if you're using PowerPoint.
Great. Kelsey, would you mind, while we're chatting, just to pop those two in a message to Spider? I think they're on your computer. So you just go under Participants and just click on them and send or you go up to the top corner where there's a chat and send a message. If it doesn't work, that's okay. I can do it later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Anne, do you have any questions about the last required learning activity?
I think the only one for me, because I've always struggled with this, is what would be the best program to use to create a graph or a pie chart or something like that, some sort of visual data thing?
I usually use Excel. But a graph would be when you're counting something. So you can show things, like if you work in the Excel file, you might be able to count how many people participated, how many were from the Yukon, how many were from NWT, those types of things. So try it in there, and if it doesn't work, let me know. The other thing that can be helpful, especially if you're capturing people's words, is something called Wordle. Wordle, and you can pop a bunch of words into an online thing, and it creates one of those word clouds for you.
Yeah, okay.
So that's another way, because not all the information we collected can be counted and shown in a chart. Some of it you might have to show in a different way.
Okay, but the charts and graphs are actually in Excel?
I didn't create any, but you certainly can. So what you would do is you would select the information, and then you tell it to, you can ask it to insert a chart based on, you know, like if you have a list of five things and you have numbers next to them, and Excel will actually pick the type of chart or graph that works best for that information that you've selected.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Okay, I'll play with that. That's great.
Perfect. And if you need a hand, just let me know.
Okay.
Great. So just to wrap up our call, I've got one last question. But before we get to the question, I just want to say, you know, I've mentioned many, many times that good evaluation can make a difference. By sharing what you learn through evaluation, you can help others recognize the powerful impact that recreation can have on personal health, on community and environmental well-being, and on quality of life in our communities. So in your role as a recreation leader and in your organization, try and prioritize evaluation. Build it into your budgets, build it into your work plans, make time for it, and as Thorsten mentioned before we started recording the call, contract someone to help you do it because it is a lot of work. Design your evaluations so that they really address real community issues and capture the benefits of recreation. Because when we do that, we can make a stand, and that capturing the benefits of recreation is something that we should do through all of our evaluations, because that will shift the public focus. It will help influence policy. It will help influence the flow of resources into recreation as well. So that's something we can do for our field. So before we wrap up, I've got one last question for you. And I'm going to start with Anne this time, and we're going to go backwards around our circle. So Anne, Spider, Thorsten, and Kelsey. And my question is, how has your perspective on evaluation changed during this learning event? So Anne, has your perspective on evaluation changed, and if so, how?
I don't know that it's changed because I really value the benefit of evaluation. I think there's nothing compares to the power that it can have in convincing funders to refund existing programs. Like I just truly believe that it really positions an organization or a program leader to be able to continue to deliver something that's meaningful and beneficial to community. And without evaluation, you can continue to wonder why nobody comes to your program or why funders don't continue to fund you. It has so much value. So I don't know that it's changed that for me, because I've always believed that, because I've seen firsthand the benefits that it brings.
That's great. Thanks, Anne. That's good to hear. Let's go over to Spider. And Spider, has your perspective on evaluation changed during this learning event? And if so, how?
Yes, it has. I'm hoping it's approaching significant. It's taken something that's nebulous and given it some more structure, some more definition, given me a sense of it's in small enough pieces now that I can tackle it more comfortably, and given some structure so that it makes the purpose and the usefulness of it much more apparent, to a point where I should and need to be, and I hopefully will embrace evaluation more than I ever have, which is not a lot apart from following through on our obligations for the funders or from my employer.
That's great. Well, I'm glad that it's helped, and I'm curious to hear how the application that you put in with the evaluation plan goes. So thank you for sharing. Thorsten, over to you. Has your perspective on evaluation changed during the learning event, and if so, how?
I don't think it has changed anything. I think it has broadened it a little bit. We did the evaluation piece with Hockey and Table Tennis last year, and going into the first ever meeting, talking about the research aspect of it, I didn't even know what I wanted and how I wanted it, and then slowly it just came together. Same with when I talk here and you make it sound more amazing than what I actually say, and it's the learning experience, and now getting more in depth with this, again, understanding some of the terms and having more idea behind the entire process helps and supports me, I think, moving forward. I'm a doer, so I don't spend too much time on trying to do so much evaluation. I think we should and we have to, but I think time is just of the essence sometimes. And with all the things that we have to do, it sometimes gets left behind. Do we need to do it? Maybe, yeah, more often, but maybe I still think we just need to do more and try things out versus trying to see the data and everything else. And yeah, I think so. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think what you're saying is, we don't always have the time to do great big fancy evaluations, but we can approach our work with an evaluation mindset. So even if the way we carry out the projects we do and the work we do, we're always thinking of what are we doing? What's working? So what does that mean? And now what are we going to do about it? That sort of is more of a mindset around evaluation. It's not actually preparing the formal evaluation and doing it properly, but it's still thinking through things in a evaluative, I don't know if that's the right word or not, way. So, I think that's an important takeaway too. So thanks for sharing that, Thorsten.
Thank you.
Kelsey, how about yourself? Has your perspective on evaluation changed? And if so, how?
I don't know that it's changed. I think just my understanding of evaluation has broadened.
Did you? I think Kelsey has an excited dog in the background. Jump back in, Kelsey. I think you probably muted yourself there. I could hear Layla in the background.
That sounded scary a little bit.
Yeah, sorry. Someone's getting their mail and she's very upset. But yeah, I don't think I just understand evaluation a little bit better now.
That's great. Thanks for sharing, Kelsey. So thanks, everybody. Again, takeaway from today is, you know, as Thorsten mentioned, maybe approach what you do with an evaluation mindset rather than thinking that you have to evaluate everything, because it's not possible to evaluate everything. I think that that's a really good takeaway. And the other takeaway is, if you're working on the required learning activities for this learning event, they're not designed for you to do something that is perfect or anything like that. It's designed for the learning experience. So put down what you think, do something that you want to test or try, and I'll give you feedback. And that it's that learning that is what I'm looking for, not the, you know, oh, you've done a great evaluation plan or anything like that. So just to take a stab at it without feeling like, you know, you have to get it quite right, because there is no right or wrong when we talk about evaluation. So we don't have a conference call next week, so you can use next week to catch up on your RLAs before our very last advanced learning event of this program cycle begins, and that is FD 101, Find and Keep Volunteers. That begins on Monday, April 25th, which coincides with National Volunteer Week. So for those of you who are joining us for that learning event, I look forward to reconnecting with you then. If you have any other questions, you can stay on the line after I stop the recording, or feel free to reach out to me at any point in time by phone, text, or email. So again, thanks so much, Masicho. Have a great day, good rest of your week. Hopefully April is sunny for you, and all the best. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Caroline. Thanks, everyone.